came walking in those doors, and I still remember the first day I showed up. I had been raised in Catholicism and went to Mass with my parents on occasion. They were like the lily and the holly mostly. You know, that's when they went. But I remember going to Mass, and when you walked in that back door, there was no talking. It was very silent. If you had a girlfriend, you didn't hold their hand, okay? It was just very sterile, I guess you might say. And I walked into this fellowship here before church had started, and I remember walking in the door and I heard all this chatter and people hugging and greeting each other and carrying on with each other and laughing. And it was just a shock to me at first. And she actually held my hand when we walked in, okay? So that was a shock in and of itself there too. I think she knew I was scared. But it all started then, and so much has happened here over the years until I finally grew up, I guess you'd say, and left the nest. And you have been a wonderful congregation to Jeannie and I. You have taught us so much. You have always supported us, and we're very grateful for that. You know, here is where I learned how to, I learned about Christ. You know, Bud Smith baptized me, former elder. And this is where I did my first prayer, where I gave my first sermon, where I married my first and only wife. And that was almost 40 years ago. So it's been a long time. You guys are looking a little older, some of you. But I was just told that my wife gets younger and I'm looking older. So I don't know. But yes, she does. But we have a long history here, and we are always very proud of this congregation. And whenever someone mentions Newland, or I have the opportunity to mention Newland, I always do, because this is my home. This is where I came to know Christ, and where my roots are. So it's been a long time. We got in the car this morning to leave Temecula, and I asked Jeannie. I said, "How long you think it's been since I've spoken here?" You know, and I want to think that 1986 was probably sometime around there when I was last here and actually spoke. So how many of you seen that movie, Lincoln, that's just come out? You seen that? That's a good movie. You ought to go see that. I highly recommend it. There's a scene in there where a gentleman, where Lincoln is in the war room with two men, and he's ready to send a cable, a telegram off to the to Grant, some information there. And as Lincoln does, he ponders things and thinks about it before he takes any action. And he looks up at the men, the two young men there that are supposed to be sending the cable. And he says, "Do you think that man is fitted for a time? You think that man is fitted for a time?" And I have to say that I believe in my heart that my being at the City of Children is something that has not just happened, but I feel very blessed in being there. It is the greatest job in the world, even though I have 100 kids, okay? And 30 of them are teenagers. It is still a great blessing. And I just feel like all that has taken place in my life, what has happened here over the years and in my development, you supporting me through the School of Biblical Studies, the planting of a congregation in Huntington Beach, all of that, all that's taken place in our lives has helped to prepare me for what I'm doing now. So you'll notice a little bit of passion in what I have to say, because I really believe in the home and its existence and what it does. So this is a picture of our front gate. Looks a little different than when some of you, how many of you have been to the City of Children? Okay, who's been there in the last 5 years? Okay, who hasn't been there in the last 20 years? Yeah, many of you. So I want to encourage you to come and be part of that. But this is our family. Included in this picture, there's about 115 kids at this time when we took this picture. We take children, if you don't know, anywhere from infant on up. We will keep them through college, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we proceed. But along with that is the board members and some of their wives, and all of the leaders that come for the summer program that we have. We have a program where we've got about 19 weeks that are covered for a week at a time, and groups come in, and I'll explain a little more about that, but they come in and spend a week there holding a continuous VBS and playing with the kids and feeding the kids and that type of thing. So this gentleman right here on the right is Ricardo, and the lady up on the far left there is Patty, his wife, and we'll get a picture of them a little more. So Just to tell you a little history, just a few facts, the home was initiated by Earl Farmer, okay? There was other people involved, certainly. Earl, I think, was in Norco. That was his roots at the time. And it's located in Ensenada, Mexico, and it's actually just before you go into Ensenada there. And it's a property of 60 acres. I think at the time it had two buildings on it. Earl wrote a history before he retired, and that's what I'm basing things on, is what Earl said, and I don't know how good his memory was at that, but this is the information I've been able to come up with. The first sponsoring congregation was Newland Street. You were the first ones to commit, and you committed $80, and you have continued to support the program, not only with a monthly fund, but also through the dinners that we used to hold, as well as the pajamas, which some of you will be presenting or bringing to the home this next Saturday. The first youth group to visit was Newland Street as well, and some of you may remember going. I certainly do. It was a great adventure. I remember driving in and seeing this open area with one building, I think I only remembered at the time, and a few kids in a room being fed. We helped prepare tortillas, beans, and rice. That was their staple at the time. That's pretty much what we afforded in the beginning. I remember Earl Farmer pulling up on that first day with a van loaded with watermelons from top to bottom, front to back, and we unloaded those watermelons and cut them in half and crushed them and made a drink for them to have to go with their beans, rice, and tortillas. So Newland Street has, as I said, played an important part throughout the existence of the home. This is our, actually May was our 40th anniversary at the City of Children, and of receiving kids. And we're actually in every year, in the end, last week in January, we have what we call a leaders retreat at the home. And those people who are sending groups for a week at a time, they come to the home for that weekend, and we review the curriculum and rules and things of that nature for them for their coming groups, okay? And so this year we're having a 40-year celebration at that, and we're going to try and collect as many of the alumni as we can that have grown up at the home and hear their stories and get to be reunited with them, and we're looking forward to that as well. So the first children were accepted on May of 1972, and currently we have 96 children at the home. The City of Children exists as a place of refuge and growth for orphaned, abused, and neglected children in Baja, fulfilling the spirit of James 1:27. And so our goal is to be a place of faith and excellence in all that we do, and our desire is that that every child achieve their full spiritual, academic, creative, personal, and emotional potential. And we want to take them from survive to thrive. We want them to break the cycle that has brought them there in the first place. And so I think that over the years we've done a good job at that. We're always striving to do better at it and looking for ways to improve the situation for them. We'll talk about some of the problems and things that they encounter. And if you have any questions, just raise your hand. I'm more than happy to answer them. Administratively, we have 9 board members. I am the only California side board member. It used to be that the board consisted only of California people, but we've migrated towards Tennessee and Arkansas and Texas and places like that. They bring the majority of the groups to the home. We have Mexican directors, which are Patty and Ricardo Gonzalez. Patty grew up at the home and has, after she graduated from high school, moved out for a period of time and then came back, and her and her husband worked there as dorm parents, and eventually they became the Mexican directors. And then, of course, I'm the American director. And our part of our areas of responsibility cross over, but for the most part, Patty and Ricardo handle the day-to-day operations of the home. And so they deal with the government, they deal with the schools, they deal with the discipline and the day-to-day operations of the home, making sure that there's food, that the staff is scheduled properly, and all of those things. They are 24/7. They have one day off, it's Friday, and usually they try to avoid coming in the office at all, but it's very difficult. And so their days run long. Ricardo is on the bus, driving the bus in the morning, first thing to take the kids to school, and on certain nights he's there waiting for the last class to end in our Creative Arts and Learning Center before he can go home and relax a little bit. So it is a very they have a great love for the children and for the work, and that's why they're able to do that. We have between 25 and 30 staff, depending on what is going on. That is Patty and Ricardo and their two sons. That is an older picture. I need to get an updated one. The son over here, Andres, he is graduating from Lipscomb University this April or May, and he is a international business major, a great kid. He does interpreting in the summer for us and for Baja Missions. He does a great work. He's got a great heart, and we're waiting to see what he's going to do. He's also found a young lady out there, so we're not sure what's if he's coming back or whatever, but he's a treat to be around. The young fella down there, he's actually 11 years old now, looks a little younger there, and he's at the home. He's a fine young man as well, and of course that's Patty and Ricardo. And people ask me all the time, where do the children come from? Well, this is a lot of what you see in the areas that they come from. They're surrounding areas that are mostly agricultural areas. Most of the parents there are agricultural farmers, and they only work when their crop needs to be planted or harvested, you know. So they're basically all very, mostly very poor, and that's the type of dwellings. That one's fortunate. It actually has plywood there. I've worked on houses made of pallets. I've worked on houses made of cardboard, whatever scrap or that they can find. The situations that they come out of are almost always the kids come out of some type of abusive situation. It may be physical, it may be emotional, it may be that they are not getting the sufficient food, it may be sexual, it may be all of those things. And so I say that because we have to deal with a variety of issues with the children when they do come to the home. Typically, it's not too profound when they're young when they come to the home, but as they get older and they get into the teen years, now we all know about teenagers, right? They have issues to begin with, just getting to that stage and getting through it. But you throw in the emotional thing of not knowing where your parents are or why you're there, or you know, why did my mother bring me here and leave me here, or, you know, a variety of different things like that. It makes it very difficult for them to deal with. The surrounding areas that the children come from are like Tecate, Mexicali, Mañadero, El Zorillo, all the places around and in the northern part of Baja. That's where we get our children from. And they don't just, I mentioned showing up the door. You could bring them to the door, but you still have to go through the government. And I'll mention the word DIF, D-I-F, and that is an abbreviation for what I don't know, okay? I just know that it is the government social services in Mexico. So the DIF actually will take the children. Somebody will, a neighbor or somebody will call the police and say, hey, these children have been deserted, they're being neglected, they're being abused, and the DIF will come and take them, and they'll take them to what they call a temporary home, and they'll clean them up, and they'll assess the situation, and they'll try to find other family that will take care of the kids, excuse me. If they're unable to do that, then they place them in homes. The City of Children for years has taken kids under a certain criteria, and that is that we take families. We generally do not take individual children because we don't want to deal with them coming and going quickly because of adoption, that type of thing. So we take families. So we have anywhere between families of 2 and 7 kids. We have one family right there now with 7 children that has been there for some time now. We also don't take children that are 13 or older generally. Okay, we have on occasion, depending on the situation, but as a rule, we don't, because they are, once they're 12, 13 years old, then they're used to being having this freedom and have a certain amount of street savvy and that to where it creates problems within the home. They don't adjust to our rules and guidelines and chores and things like that because they've never had to do that. It's too hard to get them to adapt. So that's our parameters. But we still, like I said, we have 96 kids right now. At the middle of last year, I had 119, you know. You know, someone asked me, how many can you handle? We could handle at least 150 children, you know, pretty easily. Well, I say that, I'm not Patty and Ricardo. So life at the City of Children. Typically, the children are up between 6 and 6:30. I hear them outside my window there. They are already chattering and cleaning their rooms and sweeping out their dorms. They sweep and mop every day. They make their beds every day. It's a good thing to bring your young people down to the home just so they can peruse the dorms and see that, you know, this can be done. It's enlightening to parents and children both. They get up, they do their chores, and then they get dressed, they, you know, brush their teeth, they'll have breakfast, and then they come out and do chores out on the property. We have a plethora of brooms, okay, at the City of Children, and there's a lot of cement. Stan's, I think, major calling was to lay cement at the City of Children. It is consisted of 60 acres. He doesn't have it all covered, but all of the area that we have housing and buildings in that around has plenty of cement. So they spend part of their morning, part of their afternoon, depending on what their schedule is and everything else, sweeping and cleaning up. So the grounds are very nicely kept. And they also, what isn't cement and what isn't swept is brush in that out in the upper hills and everything, and they have to clear that away to a certain amount. So they spend some time harvesting weeds as well, and it's kind of funny to watch them work because they spend a lot of time like this, you know, rather than pushing that thing. And I give them a hard time all the time when I'm out in the mornings and that walking by. I said, you're supposed to move the broom, you know, you're not supposed to lean on it, you know. But they eventually get it all done, so it works. So they get up, they do their chores, they get ready for school, and our schools there are so have so many kids that we have to take them in two shifts. So we have kids that go in the morning, about half of them go in the morning. We load them up in vans and buses that we have and take them to the schools, and they're all pretty much in the same area there. And so half of the kids will be loaded up. They get on the buses. The mamas and the papas get on the bus with them as well so that we can monitor the situation. They make sure they get into the school, into classes, that type of thing. And then they're there from about 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:30 until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Then they come back and they have lunch. And lunch is their big meal there. And they have lunch and then they do homework. And once they're finished with their homework, they can go outside and play, and they'll also have some chores sometimes in the afternoon to do as well. And that's pretty much their day when there's not groups there, okay? Every afternoon at 4:30, they have a Bible study for 45 minutes in the main auditorium there, so they all congregate there. They have their Bible study. They go back. They have dinner. The babies are in bed by 7:30. Yeah. and then the other kids are in bed by 8:30. So this is one of the dorms. If you haven't been there, you see all the little beds. You see how nice and neatly they're made in that. That is the way it looks. Whenever you go in there, that is how it will look. If you want that picture, I can send it to you for your own kids, you know. You see the closets, all the, you know, I think it's blankets or whatever stacked in there. But all their clothes are in there. When they're in the younger years, they have a few things of their own if their sponsors send it to them. But most of what they have is kind of interchange. They share with each other in that. This is two of our young men studying the Bible in the dorm. And then this is our worship. We have if you haven't been there, we have a big, it's like a gym that was built. And it'll hold a lot of people. But this is one of the worships. And also it's a good thing to bring your kid to one of our worships and stay on Sunday, because unlike any other church I've been in, those kids do not get up. They don't all of a sudden have to go to the bathroom. They sit there and they participate. They sing. They will answer questions. They will respond to the speaker if need be. And they stay in their seat. And it's pretty amazing. I wrestled three kids in this congregation, okay? So I know what it's like wrestling kids through worship. And I can remember Jeannie getting up and taking out our oldest one with his hands over his seat. Some of you may remember that, saying, I don't want a spanking, you know? Somehow these kids seem to manage it. These are five of our girls that were baptized this summer. That's Ricardo there. He did the baptizing, just a great blessing. We have had, over the course of the 40 years, just at the City of Children, close to 1,000 baptisms of our young people that have been there. And mind you, our kids come and they stay for long. Most of them grow up there, you know, spend most of their life there. So We are very blessed. That is not counting the children, the young people, the adults that have been baptized through the churches that have been planted through the City of Children all the way down into San Catin, Baja. Threw this in there so I would remember to talk about this a little bit. This is the dental chair. I actually need a new one. It looks pretty ratty. But the care for our children, the day-to-day care, is very good. We have a husband and wife. The wife is a dentist. The husband is a doctor. And they have been serving the children there for 18 years now. And they are a blessing to us. The kids, the wife shows up on Friday. I think the husband shows up on Wednesday. And the kids are lined up for, you know, if they need treatment for their teeth, if they need, you know, treatment for a cold or something of that nature, they are there. Dr. Martinez, of course, plays the more important part in that sometimes we get serious situations, and he is a great resource to have. If you're sick or injured in Tijuana, or no, excuse me, in Ensenada, you really don't want to go to the Social Security hospital. You know, it's just not that good, okay? But with Dr. Martinez, we're able to have access to the private hospital. And we recently, last year, some of you may get the newsletters and read that Alondra, one of our young ladies there, she came up with cancer. And they had to remove a tumor. They had to perform a couple different surgeries on her. She had three surgeries and was in the hospital a total of probably 3-4 weeks in Ensenada in a private hospital. And it cost us, I think, $13,000. Now, just think to yourself what that would cost here in the States. Half a day would be $13,000, I think is what it about comes to. I had a surgery a few years ago, and I think it was $45,000, and I wasn't even there 24 hours. So the cost there is very reasonable. The kids are well taken care of. We have a few of those kids who think they always have an issue, you know, that there's always something wrong with them. But for the most part, they're very healthy, and they do well. This is the, right here, I think our group is here during this picture, and we're doing a craft with the kids, but this is the Americano, what we call the Americano kitchen. So when the groups come there, this is the main meeting room for meals. And so typically on a Sunday, especially when there's groups there, we have our family meal together after church, and it's a great time. It is the best food. It has adapted itself to me more than I want to say. The tortillas are wonderful. But we have very good cooks on campus, and the kids are well fed, and they get a variety, much more than beans and rice and tortillas that they used to get. So I want to talk a little bit about group visits. As I said, we have groups that come. We have between 17 and 19 that come every year. Most of them are repeat groups that come. They come from Lipscomb University, Harding University, Freed Hardeman University. They come from Christian schools back in Tennessee and Atlanta and Arkansas. And they come between 30 and 70 people at a time. They pay their own expenses to get there. So they have to pay airfare. Some of them have to rent a bus to get to the bus station to fly down to San Diego. So they have to pay for that. They have to pay for airfare to get to and from. They have to charter a bus to get down into Ensenada because we can't handle that many people and luggage and everything else. We don't have those type of accommodations. But we do have housing for them when they get there. So plus that, besides that, they have to pay for, of course, all their food while they're there. And they pay a small fee for the use of, you know, water and electricity and that type of thing. So it is a major expense. Most groups spend, each child raises between $600 and $800 to come to the City of Children to spend a week working there. And they arrive typically on a Friday, on a Saturday afternoon, usually late afternoon. They'll get to the home on the charter bus. They'll unload everything. Typically, they'll order pizza out. We'll bring it in for them. And they'll have pizza and a devotional with our teens. And then the next morning, it's up with worship with everybody. And then the big family meal on Sunday and activities and playing on Sunday afternoon. In the evening, they kick off their vacation Bible school. And so they have a theme and a text or a scripture or something to work with, and they're threading along with the other groups, adding on chapter after chapter whatever. And so they kick off on Sunday evening, and then it carries on to Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday each evening. On Monday morning, usually the groups are broken up into three units, okay? One unit will go out to one of the local churches. There's four or five churches in the area that we have planted there that they will go out and they'll do some type of project, depending on what kind of skills they have with in their group. And sometimes they build a house. Sometimes they just hand out food. They do food relief. They'll go to people's homes. They'll give them food. They'll pray with them. They'll sing with them. They'll spend some time with them. And they'll do three or four or five houses in a day. sometimes they do medical clinics. They do dental clinics. Sometimes they have the skills to someone who is takes care of hair, something like that, and so they'll cut hair, a variety of different things. But depending on their skills and how much time they have, they're supposed to be back at the home by 1 o'clock. The two groups that remain at the home, one of them goes and entertains what we call the babies. That's the toddlers from infant on up into 5-6 years old, depending on the child, and they spend time with them. And then the other group does a work project at the home. You know, we've got 60 acres. We've got a number of large buildings, and the maintenance is endless. You know, we're a mile from the beach, so you know what that does to a house. So they have a lot of fun scraping paint, pouring cement, you know, you name it. A lot of times there's more paint on the cement than on the walls, but they help us keep up the facility. They have lunch with, they typically entertain either all the kids or one of the groups of kids at the home for lunch. And then after that, there's a break. And then at 2 o'clock, they go up to the play area. They play with the kids until 4:30. And then some of the kids will come down and have dinner with them, depending on who they select to do that. And then it's, again, the Vacation Bible School. So this goes on through the week. They leave early on Friday morning. The difference on Thursday is they finalize their part of the Vacation Bible School, and sometimes they just have a carnival. Sometimes they have a full-on play that they act out for it. One of our board members, he brings the largest group. Typically, it's at least 70 people, and they do a lip dub throughout the. If you know what that is, that's how do you explain it? I don't know how you explain it, but it's a video, a music video, that they're lip-syncing the words, and he does all on the campus. He does one every Thursday evening, afternoon, before the kids go to bed. So on Thursday night, we have what I call the Walk of Tears, and so the young people that are there, they go up, and all of us walk up to the individual dorms, the medianos. We don't go to the teens, we don't go to the babies, because the babies go to bed early, but we go up to what we call the medianos. That's the middle-aged kids from 6 on up to 12, 13 years old, depending on the child. And they go into their individual dorms, and they tuck them in. They say goodbye to them. And it's a very tearful event for some of them, because you get very attached in a week's time. You develop relationships with these children. And you think that I don't speak the language. And so how am I going to communicate? You'd be surprised how close you can get in a week's time not speaking any Spanish. Now, I'm embarrassed, but I don't speak any Spanish. I know no Spanish at all. My son has a doctorate in Spanish. He teaches at Pepperdine. He's fluent. My wife has a minor in Spanish, and she can understand and speak it. She's getting better at it because she hasn't practiced it for years. But I'm the only guy that speaks no Spanish, and I'm able to still communicate and to do business and to interact with the kids on a regular basis. So, you know, don't let that be something to hold you back and say, well, I don't speak any Spanish. You'd be surprised. The communication. These are some of the activities that the groups do when they come here. And, you know, I left out something very important, and that is that the kids, you know, basically they go to school and they come back to the compound. You know, and it can be a prison-like situation, especially as you're getting into your older years, because the DIF does not allow us to, and we used to be able to. We used to bring kids into the States. They take them to Disneyland, take them to SeaWorld, things of that nature, but the DIF doesn't allow us to do that unless you get special permission, and in order to take them to a movie, to dinner. They don't get to go to their friend's house to play and anything of that nature. You have to go through the DIF, and you have to get permission from each city where the children came from. So we have children from all over, from Mexicali, Tecate, Tijuana, Ensenada. So you have to get, the kids are from all over those places. So if you've got 20 kids and they come from all five of those, you have to go to each one of those government agencies and say, can so-and-so come to this? Can so-and-so? And so you can see it's just very cumbersome, it's time-consuming, and it's difficult. And sometimes they don't even respond. You know, they just don't respond. We had a girl that had a graduation event that she wanted to go to, and she's graduating from high school, and all of her class is going to this event, and we could not get a response from the DIF to let her go, and she had to stay home. So these are just some of the interaction with that, the different things that the groups do with the children. I'm not sure what this was, but they had a face painting thing. I don't know what took place there. I wasn't out there. So one of the things that we've done, it's just recently happened, if you've looked at our website or gotten any of the information, is that we have been able to build what is called the Creative Arts and Learning Center. And that is to help the children, number one, be exposed to things they won't normally get exposed to. As I said, they basically go to school. School is only about 4 hours, and then they come back. They're only exposed to the basics in school, history, math, language classes, things of that nature. So it's very limited. So we had some friends of the home that started coming to the home and fell in love with the kids, fell in love with the home. And they're originally from Atlanta, and their kids went to Greater Atlanta Christian School, which is a pretty prominent Christian school there in Atlanta. And they have something like this. And you may not recognize this. Those of you who've been there, this is where like the leather shop used to be and the sewing shop and things like that. But they said, if you will build this facility, we will furnish it. We'll take care of the furnish. And they committed up to $50,000 to do that. And so we were able to raise the funds to get started on it. And we started the process. And what it became was this center where the kids can be exposed to a number of different parts of the arts. And so you see in here that the kids are playing guitar. Keyboard there. We have a piano. This is one of the instructors there that comes into the home on a regular basis and teaches the kids music. Her husband teaches music as well as art. We're very blessed in having them. They love the children. They enjoy working with the children. They're very patient, and they do a great job. This is another one of the classes. Now, I mentioned that couple. It took us, I think, the whole facility, and it's about 5,000 to 8,000 square feet. I've never actually seen the measurement, so I don't know. But it's quite large, and so to furnish it is going to take a fair amount. This is the library area that we have, and then this is the kids taking a karate class. They just recently started taking karate, and it's really great because it teaches them respect, discipline, and it burns up some of that energy. So they. They sleep at night, So that's great. I'm gonna go back to this one. Just talk a little bit about. I'm told 10:45, right? Are we good there? Okay. So the Creative Arts and Learning Center consists of a large area when you walk in the door to the right that has a big reception desk. It has three rooms for small rooms for counseling, for studying, and that type of thing. It has a very large open area with a library with a kind of Barnes & Noble Starbucks look to it, where they have couches and chairs and lights and rugs, and you can come in there and select a book or a game. All the games that are there are geared towards the intellect, exercising your brain type thing. We have a whole long row of computers across the back that are all filtered and monitored, and allows the kids to go on there and do their homework and do research and do development things. There's programs on there where they can improve their math skills and things of that nature. We have, I think, 14 computers in all in the facility itself. So that's the larger room, and then off to the side are four pretty good-sized rooms, and one of them is an art room, and one of them is the karate dance studio. The girls are going to start Zumba here pretty soon, and There's also cultural dance. We're looking for someone to come in from the community to do some type of dance, like jazz dance, things of that nature for the kids. Someone has already had a project, two young girls from one of the congregations in Tennessee, were very much involved in dance, and they got all their friends to donate their dance stuff that they grew out of or don't use or whatever, as well as the studios. And so we have a bunch of tap shoes that are like new and the different things that they use and wear already waiting for them to start that. And we take these things for granted. Our kids, my daughter went to dance. My kids took karate. They played soccer. None of those things can they do in an organized way and get instruction on it unless they're outside the home, except now. So it's a great treat, and it has really helped the kids. Like I said, it burns up energy, but it's a great blessing to them for them to be exposed to things of that nature. So we ask ourselves, okay, we invested all these dollars and we've supported this home over all the years. What happens to these kids once they leave? And that's one of the other questions I get answered most often. And we are very proud of the success of the young people. Of course, not all of them are successful. Some of them go back and repeat the cycle. Much to our, it hurts. We don't like to see that, a good many of them live productive lives and break the cycle from which that has placed them there. I'm just going to talk about a few of these men. This gentleman here on the left, I'm sorry, I can't even remember his name. I don't know him that well, so I won't talk about him. He was there before me, and I've only seen him a few times. Alejandro, the gentleman in the rust, I guess you'd say. Alejandro grew up at the home. He has a degree in architecture. He is recently married to a very sweet young lady. He also is now going to school to get a degree to be a lawyer. He works with Baja Missions, and he travels up and down the coast to the different churches, helping the churches interpreting and making arrangements for him and that type of thing. He'll do anything we ask him at the home. He actually, on the front, that structure you saw on the front of the Creative Arts and Learning Center, he designed that. So he's got his mark on the home. The next gentleman next to him with the hat on and the funny glasses is Arturo. Arturo is our kind of wandering man. He can't make up his mind what he really wants to do, but right now he's going to, we've just established a school of biblical studies at the through Baja Missions at the home, and Arturo is going through that, and he's doing quite well in it, so I'm hoping he's finding his calling. The next gentleman there is Misha, and Misha is a great blessing to the home. He does a lot for us. He actually works for Baja Missions, he grew up at the home. His mom works at the home. He has two sisters that grew up at the home as well. One of them is still there going to school, and I'll show you her picture in a bit. And I cannot brag enough about him. You would be proud to have any of those young men as your sons. I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to Mario. Mario grew up at the home as well, and this gentleman on the other side of Yvonne there is his brother Jesus, okay? Mario grew up at the home. He has a degree in graphic design, and he was our main interpreter for all the groups when they come in. He's wonderful with the children. The children love him. He loves being with them. He's very good with them. Well, Greater Atlanta Christian School has robbed us of him. They were able to get a visa for him, and he is now working with Greater Atlanta Christian School, teaching classes and teaching Spanish and things of that nature for them. We miss him greatly, but it's a great blessing for him. The gentleman in the middle right there is Yvonne on the lower part. Yvonne now is going to school to be a lawyer. He lives in Ensenada. He lives with Jesus, actually, the gentleman next to him. Jesus as well grew up at the home. He went to preaching school. He's graduated from preaching school. He teaches most of our Bible classes on a daily basis, as well as does the preaching whenever we don't have a guest speaker at the home. So a great contributor he does. And besides that, he's a carpenter and does a variety of different things around. So he's our young Jesus, you might say. Yeah. So this is Liliana. Liliana grew up at the home. She still lives there. She's going to college. She is going to school to be a nurse, working very hard to do that. This is Floor. Floor grew up at the home as well with two or three sisters, and Floor is my office manager there. And she does speak English, so it's very helpful having an office manager who speaks English for me. And she is wonderful with the kids and handles all the day-to-day things that happen, either whether I'm there or not. This here is Carmen. That is, as I said, Misha's sister. Carmen is going to college as well. She is going to school, getting a degree in communications, as well as taking photography. And she, whenever she's not doing homework, and she's not helping with something else, she turns herself in. She comes into the office and will do whatever we ask her to. This is a wedding, a big event that we had this year, our first big wedding that we had. We had over 200 guests. We had a full catered meal and everything, and all the kids got to come, and it was a great event. This is Alejandro, which I showed you before. So I'm going to go over one thing because I see I've got like probably 30 seconds here. How safe is it? People ask me that all the time. Is it safe? I've been going in and out of there for 3 years now on a regular basis. Sometimes I go in and out 2-3 times a week. And I've encountered no issues, no problems. I've heard no gunshots. I've seen nothing that would scare me. If you don't know, guns are not legal in Mexico, so you don't see them or anything. There are plenty of police around to keep things in check. The government in Baja has worked very hard to keep the drug cartel out of there, and we're just not running into any issues. You will see military checkpoints throughout. It is for our safety that they're there, and so they're just making sure that they have control, that they keep the lid on this thing. And as I said, the first couple times I went through there, it was a little intimidating seeing military guards with guns. Some of these guys look like they're 16, you know, that kind of thing. But I feel safe there. I do go out in the evening on occasion to get some ice cream, you know, something like that. And of course, we go with people. When you come to the home, we don't just let people go off. There's rules that we follow when you do come to the home. So I'm out of time to cover those things. So I'm going to go right down here. So how can we get involved? Well, we have a trip going next week. There are several of us that are going down, some of them from your congregation here. You can sign up and go in. You do need, if you're 16 or older, you do need a passport to get back and forth. If you don't have a passport, they're still going to let you back in, okay? But it's best if you have one just to avoid any keeping your car held up or something like that. Visit the home is one of the ways. We really need visitors from California. You heard me mention all those groups that are coming. They're coming from all other parts of the country. They're not coming from California. We have easiest access, the least expensive access, right here, and we need those churches to come visit the home. You can sponsor a child. You can do a partial sponsor, a full sponsorship of a child. I have three or four children right now that are without sponsorship. One of the great blessings that we had with the Creative Arts and Learning Center was that two people last year put us in their estate planning, and that was... That helped us get the start on the Creative Arts and Learning Center. It played a big part. So as you're making out your will and that kind of thing, think of those things. Hopefully put something in there for the City of Children so that we can continue for another 40 years. And then we do send out a weekly newsletter. Sometimes it's not so weekly if there's not a lot going on at the home. We don't send one out. But it's usually, especially during the summer months, and that when we have groups there, it'll be every week we'll send it out with information on it and our website. And then of course we send you our quarterly report. So I was hoping to leave enough time for questions, but obviously I didn't. I appreciate your time, and we appreciate your support that you've given us over the years. If you have questions, feel free to talk to me afterwards. I'd be happy to answer any questions about coming to the home and what you can do and how you can be part of that. You can call me anytime, and I'll be happy to answer your questions. You can also email me. I left some stuff out in the foyer there, some former publications that we've put out, as well as my card in that. So please make use of that and email me if you have any questions or needs. All right? Thank you.